And you're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Good morning. It's Monday, March 15th. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
But obviously the disturbance, the party slash riot was on top of everyone's mind.
We are having our 15th annual Latino-Latina Advocacy Day. So we've been 15 years strong.
My passion for DALI started actually from the day of my birth.
Those are some of the voices you'll hear on today's magazine. We'll start with an update on snow closures and other weather-related issues, including cancellations. Then we'll get an update about what's new at Boulder City Hall with reporter Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News. Today is the 15th annual Latino Advocacy Day. Today's virtual session will include learning more about the pressing issues facing Latinos statewide. Finally, we'll get a preview of this afternoon's Metro show airing at 3 p.m. on KGNU when Miriam Schiff talks about the art and legacy of Salvador Dali with a couple new authors, or authors with a new book, I should say. Following a commentary from Jim Hightower just after the BBC headlines at the bottom of the hour, it's a public affair, and today that's Black Talk, a collaboration between KGNU and the NAACP of Boulder County. Today, we bring you excerpts from a recent panel discussion called Black in Boulder, and hear about Black Joy. As always, Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first this morning, we'll take a look at headlines. Here's KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
The blizzard that struck Colorado will go into the records as the fourth largest ever recorded in Denver, with more than 27 inches officially measured at the airport Sunday at midnight. The National Weather Service reports that Boulder got 20 inches, Louisville 24, Longmont about 18, and Fort Collins up to about 23. Several drivers in Aurora had to be rescued as police SWAT members aided stranded motorists on city roadways and on E-470, which was littered with about 30 stranded vehicles. Airlines canceled more than 800 flights from Denver yesterday, and airport officials closed all runways just before noon due to blowing snow and poor visibility. More than 25,000 Xcel Energy customers were without power Sunday night in the metro area and in northern Colorado. Weld County experienced the most outages. There are many closures today because of the storm. Boulder Valley schools are closed, as are those in Denver, Aurora, and Douglas County. Other school districts like St. Vrain Valley and Jeffco are on remote learning status. Both the University of Colorado at Boulder and the Auraria campus in Denver are closed. Many government offices are also closed, including both Boulder City and County, Denver, Longmont, and Broomfield. RTD suspended all bus and rail service at 7 p.m. last night. The agency has not announced when service will resume except for the A-line trains, which were to begin running early this morning. Many roads are closed. Travelers should check with CDOT before venturing out. Governor Jared Polis announced Friday that the general population in Colorado will be eligible to receive a COVID-19 vaccine by mid-April, depending on supply. He said they will have a better handle on that supply in the next few weeks, and then they'll be able to pinpoint a specific date in April for everyone to be eligible. Polis' announcement came a day after President Biden said that all Americans will have access to a vaccine by May 1, but the governor said he thinks the state will be able to beat that goal. Polis said that he thinks the state is in for a more or less normal summer, and to emphasize his view, he said that he would sign his own kids up for summer camp with a great degree of confidence. Polis also announced that people in Phase 1B4 will become eligible on March 19th, 2 days earlier than previously announced. The category includes people 50 and older, restaurant and other essential workers, and those 16 to 49 with a high-risk condition. Nearly 20% of Colorado's population has received at least one dose of a vaccine, according to the latest data from the state. Earlier, Polis said that the state has the capacity to administer many more vaccines than it has, but it has been unlimited by the available supply. A Colorado legislator has introduced a bill that would ban handcuffing of elementary school students in the state. Democratic State Senator Janet Buckner of Aurora is sponsoring the measure after she read about a lawsuit alleging school resource officers in Douglas County handcuffed an 11-year-old Hispanic boy and held him for 2 hours in a patrol car, all for scratching a classmate with a pencil. Buckner's bill would also make changes intended to overhaul school disciplinary procedures and limit the school-to-prison pipeline. Chalkbeat reported that at least 65 kids were handcuffed in a two-year period in Denver alone, but there the practice has been eliminated in elementary schools. The Denver Post reports that the bill is a priority for the legislature's Black Caucus. Governor Jared Polis specifically highlighted this legislation in last month's State of the State address. Also at the legislature, Democratic leaders are pushing a bill that would ban restaurants and retailers from using single-use plastic bags and plastic foam containers. Axios reports that the measure would give cities the power to set their own curbs on plastics, but some say that would create a confusing patchwork of differing policies. Boulder police have arrested a second person in connection with last weekend's party that became violent on University Hill. The Daily Camera reports that Garrett Doyle, 22 years old, was arrested Saturday on suspicion of various charges, including assault, menacing, engaging in a riot, and violating public health orders. CU Boulder's online database did not list Doyle as a student. An estimated 500 to 800 college-aged people gathered near Pennsylvania Avenue and 10th Street a week ago Saturday evening in a large outdoor party that became destructive, with people flipping a car and damaging other vehicles and property. A Boulder armored SWAT vehicle eventually arrived on scene to disperse the crowd, but the truck was damaged and three officers suffered minor injuries. In the weather today, there's a slight chance of snow between noon and 3 p.m., otherwise partly sunny with a high near 35. Tomorrow, partly sunny skies with snow possible in the afternoon, but only about a half an inch of new accumulation, and highs tomorrow in the mid-30s. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Well, the storm is moving out. Roads are still in rough shape this morning. Several roads and highways around the state closed. Xcel Energy is still trying to restore power to some folks. And again, calling it the fourth largest snowstorm we've ever had in Colorado's history. Things will start to get back to normal tomorrow, and that will probably include a Boulder City Council meeting tomorrow night. We know not everyone has time to follow what's going on over at City Hall, so every couple of weeks we check in with Shay Castle, a journalist and the owner and publisher of Boulder Beat News.
Good morning, Shay. City Council did not hold a formal or televised session last week or a study session because they've been busy interviewing Boulder residents who have applied to be on the boards and commissions. Tell our listeners what that process was like.
The board and commission interviews take place over 3 days. So they had a Thursday session last week and then Tuesday and Thursday interviews this week. All in all, it looks like we got about 90 applicants for around 25 open seats. So a little bit less than in previous years than in last year. But last year, remember, they seated an entirely new board, the Cannabis Licensing and Advisory Board. So it's really hard to draw too many conclusions, but I wouldn't be surprised if participation was down a little bit because of the pandemic. And, you know, these are all, as of yet, meetings being held on Zoom. And I think there's a little Zoom fatigue out there.
So they are scheduled to make those appointments tomorrow night, right?
Correct. Tomorrow night will be the appointments. They have not always gotten them done all in one night. Sometimes they've had to break them up, but they've scheduled 90 minutes for that in the meeting, and those will include, I believe, a public hearing.
Well, I also see, Shay, that they have something called the Public Disturbance Briefing. And for those who don't know, that sounds like Police Chief Maris Harold is going to be attending. She has addressed the party disturbance on Uni Hill on Saturday, March 6th, a little bit. That was mostly student-age people who had gathered, and the crowd swelled to somewhere between 500 and 800 people, police estimated. And then they finally broke it up after several hours, and some folks turned violent, and now arrests are being made based on video that they captured. What do you expect from them?
Not much, actually. Council has already addressed this a little bit. They had a meeting with CU the middle of last week on Wednesday, CU leadership. That was a regularly scheduled meeting just to talk about, you know, the town and gown issues. But obviously the disturbance, the party slash riot was on top of everyone's mind. So they shared a bit of information there. You know, the police are starting to make arrests. They have hundreds of tips and hundreds of videos to review to try and identify some of the suspects involved in vandalism of private and police vehicles. And in preparing for tomorrow's meeting, the council scheduling committee just said they feel like they can't not address it, but it's going to be very quick because the police are incredibly busy investigating. So they're just going to give an update as to, you know, the investigations and, you know, what CU has pledged to do in terms of discipline, which includes up to expulsion. They've already done several suspensions for previous COVID violations, but it seems like they're treating this a bit more seriously. But, you know, that remains to be seen.
Right. And speaking of crime, some powerful speakers at the most recent city council meeting talking about their experiences with crime in downtown Boulder. And that is on the agenda, an update on downtown crime.
The Boulder Police Department will also be doing that, sharing some statistics and updates on what they're doing to try and combat crime downtown, which has risen during the pandemic. Of course, this is not particularly surprising. Crime always rises in times of economic hardship and uncertainty, and Boulder's certainly not alone in that. Just that there are fewer people downtown, and that often correlates with rising crime when there aren't people, you know, shopping and walking around to kind of discourage crime. So we'll hear on Tuesday. There's no information on that on the packet, so that whatever they share will be entirely surprised to us and the public.
Well, what other topics are on the agenda, Shay, that we should know about?
I think just one other thing that might be of note, and particularly given the disturbance on the Hill recently, Planning Board in February unanimously approved change in use for the Marfa House on University Hill, which has been a group living situation for several years. And I don't know if listeners will remember, the landmarking of that building was quite controversial. It was done over the owner's objections, which doesn't happen very often in Boulder. So now instead of redeveloping that, the property owner is going to be turning that from a group living situation to 16 three-bedroom units, which will be rented out most likely as student housing. And there's a lot of opposition to this project, although I said the planning board did approve it unanimously. And now council reserves the right to call up or review that decision. So, you know, if they disagree with the planning board or if they want to add their own conditions for approval on this project, they can do what's called a call up and review the plans. On Tuesday, they'll just be voting whether or not to call it up. And then if they do, that hearing would be scheduled at a later date.
March will soon be over. Anything coming up that we should be watching for April?
Actually, a lot in April. March is not all that busy. Council's taking the last 2 weeks off for spring break and then a fifth Tuesday. But April, there's going to be, you know, a revisit of the encampment issue for people experiencing homelessness. There's going to be an update on CU South. There's going to be more discussion of crime. April is quite a busy month, and if there's one month to pay attention to, April is the one.
That was journalist Shay Castle. You can read more of Castle's work at boulderbeat.news. It's 8:17 at KGNU.
Support comes from Colorado Tech Point, a technology store specializing in sales and repair service of verified pre-owned laptops, computers, and mobile devices. Located at 436 Main Street in downtown Longmont. More information at co-techpoint.com or by calling 303-848-3738.
Sessions for the 15th annual Latino Advocacy Project began yesterday and will continue today virtually. Latino Advocacy Day provides training and briefings on policy issues that most impact Latinos in Colorado. KGNU's Rosanna Longo spoke with Yadira Saliz from COLOR, that's the Colorado Organization for Latina Opportunity and Reproductive Rights, about the main policy priorities affecting Latinx and immigrant communities in the state.
My name is Yadira Saliz. I'm the Outreach and Organizing Manager at COLOR, and I'm working on all the logistics of LAD. And I am so excited because we are having our 15th annual Latino-Latina Advocacy Day. So we've been 15 years strong, and what the theme is keeping up the momentum for residents of Colorado, for people in Colorado in general, to come and be able to, one, first and foremost, be educated on the issues that are most relevant and important to them, and additionally, being able to go and lobby with their legislator or their representative. Latino-Latina Advocacy Day is happening this Sunday, March 14th, from 9 a.m. to 1, and on Monday, March 15th, from 9 a.m. to 12:30. 5:30. And so the first day, we will actually have our Latino Caucus panel, it led by Senator Julie Gonzalez, and then we will have panelists of the Latino Caucus, Representative Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez, Carrie Tipper, Representative Valdez, and then Senate President Leroy Garcia. And so we're really excited to hear from them, like, what are the policy priorities that they are wanting to push forward. And then after that, we will actually have workshops. And these workshops are related under reproductive justice, environmental justice, criminal justice, economic justice. And of course, the most important one is that is always saturated is the immigrant rights section. And so you asked me at the very beginning, what is something important for Latinas to know, Latinas or Latinos, right? To know during this Latino-Latina Advocacy Day. And I think one of the policy priorities, one that Color is leading, and that is the Medicaid expansion for members of the immigrant community. And so what that policy will do is two things. So the first thing is be able to expand Medicaid oral contraceptives through the entire year. And then the second thing is to be able to have populations of the immigrant community be able to access those contraceptives. So that is super important for the Latina woman, because we recognize that if you're in Metro Denver, you'll be able to access that a little bit quicker and better. But you still have periods of 3 months, 6 months, and this one will make it at least to a year. The second thing is that a lot of women, maybe in rural areas like Telluride or like Durango or Lamar, they're sometimes far away from certain clinics where they can access this. So this is really important for the community. And then the second one the Immigrant Justice Workshop does is they're going to be talking about privacy on their data. People in the community rely on the DMV, and little did we know that the DMV was actually sharing information. We need to have those protocols set so those things don't happen to our immigrant community, to our Latino community. So that is one thing that we want to highlight. And then the second day is where you put to practice everything that you learned on the first day. So you'll be able to highlight the Senate bills that everybody is wanting to push forward. And I think for me, if I would choose the two workshops, I would probably do the economic justice workshop and maybe the immigrants' rights workshop.
We have been the most affected community in Colorado because of COVID-19. And we are also seeing that we have lost jobs. And it seems like those jobs are not coming back, especially those that have been done by women, those that have been in restaurants, cleaning businesses and cleaning houses and offices. They are like gone.
The Economic Justice Workshop is going to specifically talk about is regulations for charging tenants their monthly rent, knowing that during the pandemic and during the COVID-19, a lot of people did lose their jobs for many reasons, right? And so one of the things that we are recognizing is that landlords in apartments or landlords in houses are able to basically kick out the tenant. And so we started noticing that there needs to be a policy set to protect the rights of the tenants, to protect the rights of the people to not lose their home during this very important and very critical time. One of the things that we will actually have is a doctor. His name is Dr. Carlos Franco Paredes, who will talk about the disparities in the Latino community and then why it's so important to change the narrative that it's not that Latinos are not taking the shot, because at this point, the narrative is we are taking the shot. We just need to kind of debunk the myths as to why many Latinos won't want to. And so right now we are in the narrative of Latinos are now taking the vaccine. We just need to push, you know, our neighbors and our family and friends to those that maybe are skeptical on that.
Is there something else crucial for the future and the well-being of the Latino, Latinx community in the years to come?
That's a really good question. And I think about the legacy of Latino, Latina Advocacy Day now that it's been 15 years. With Latino Advocacy Day, we've allowed people to assign themselves a role in this movement of like civil justice and social justice. So whether it is you're an organizer, whether it is in your area, in maybe a rural area or in Denver metro area, wherever it is, people may be more inclined to run for office. And so we recognize that with LAD, there's a leadership ladder in your own community. And it all is about how you want to get involved and how you want to participate, right? LAD is one of the platforms that you can participate. And the second one is being able to organize in your own community or run for office. Senator Julie Gonzalez, one of the things that she mentions is that Colorado is a state where we're not at parity with how many Latinos are in the Latino caucus, which are in the Democratic caucus is only 13. And we should be at least 20 representatives total so we can represent this whole state of Colorado.
It's extremely important to represent so that the decisions come and the solutions come from that community, not imposed by others that do not understand our needs.
Exactly. And that's what most is important, I think, representation, because Latinos come in all shapes, sizes, and ideas. And so I think representation is critical, especially on this day, educating yourself. And then this is a perfect space to at least learn how to speak with a legislator, or how to lobby, or maybe how to write a letter, or how to call your representative.
These 2 days are important, but what else can people do?
If you want to get involved, the main thing is finding an organization that aligns to your values, to what you want to participate in and get into. Connect with them. Maybe become a volunteer, maybe attend their different events, because there's different events happening with, for example, with our co-conveners, with CERC, with Protégete, with Claro, with ACLU or 9to5. There's so many opportunities, and one of them is getting involved. And then the second thing is calling your legislator and just saying, I support this policy for these reasons. That is the one thing that you can do. Call your legislator or get involved.
For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo.
Again, Rosana Longo speaking there with Yadira Solis with the Colorado Organization for Latina Opportunity and Reproductive Rights. It's 8:25. You're listening to KGNU. Well, the global vaccination campaign for COVID-19 is continuing, of course, and has hit about 345 million doses. But North America and Europe far outpaced most countries in Asia and Africa. In the U.S., early data on vaccination rates shows in addition to Latinos, Black Americans are getting vaccinated at a much slower rate than their white counterparts. Donna Patterson at Delaware State University is the author of Pharmacy in Senegal, Gender, Healing, and Entrepreneurship.
Yes, you do see some people of color who are reticent, be it people who are Black, people who are Hispanic, or from other groups. But at the same time, there's a lot of demand also coming from these communities to get vaccinated. I think a larger question that isn't often always addressed is, what is the access for people of color? Are they able to get the vaccine when they want the vaccine? And I think in a lot of ways, you're seeing the inequities because they're not having the same access in terms of maybe how the information is distributed, but also maybe what groups they're in. Are they in the groups, those who are being affected the most, or that are both contracting COVID the most, but also dying at higher rates? Because people who are dying from COVID the most are people who are Black, Brown, and Indigenous in this country. Similar, we're seeing those trends in other parts of the world. In the UK, for instance, you're seeing high rates of people who are Black and Brown, mostly people who are Black, British, and of Indian descent, for instance, in the UK, who are also acquiring it and dying, particularly looking at sort of the medical professionals and stuff. There's been a lot of research on that, and they're being impacted at higher levels. So I think really getting information to groups of people who both fit into the groups in terms of, you know, maybe race and ethnicity, also older people, elderly, a lot of them aren't using the internet. How can they register? You know, having people maybe work with their pair with them, have call-in. There's some of this, but maybe, you know, really expand this, have more call-ins, just walk people through. And but then also you have to make sure, too, that those places are vetted, maybe through community centers, through churches, put the word out, both in terms of vaccinations that are available to broad groups of people, but also elderly, because it needs to come from someone who's trusted. You can't just give out that information to, you know, someone who may call your house. So really reaching out into community groups, getting the information out that way, helping people who may not have the access, they may not have internet, they may not have an email address, they may not know how to use the computer, they may not have extra data on their phone. Also, when you're looking at the more mass vaccine distributions that we're starting to see, or some of the last minute distributions, often they're advertised on social media and maybe forms of social media where a lot of groups aren't using as much. And so I think that's another way. You have to really think in ways, thinking of the tools that people need, meeting people where they're at, to get them vaccinated.
Again, that was Donna Patterson, chair of the Department of History, Political Science and Philosophy, and director of Africana Studies at Delaware State University. She is also the author of A Pharmacy in Senegal, Gender, Healing, and Entrepreneurship. Well, this afternoon, we have Metro coming up at 3 o'clock, and Miriam Schiff will be talking about a new book called The Dolly Legacy, How an Eccentric Genius Changed the Art World, including author Christopher Heath Brown. Here he is with a preview.
My passion for Dolly started actually from the day of my birth. I was given a newspaper by my sister of the New York, one of the New York papers. And in that very paper from March 23rd, 1961, is a photograph and an article about Salvador Dali. I started collecting Dali probably in the early 90s, just because I enjoyed his art, and I've now made it into pretty much a full-time job. I have all but 10 of all graphic works, and there's approximately 2,000 graphic works. I pride myself in having some of the finest original drawings, which were used as studies for some of the most important paintings that Dali painted. I own several watercolors and gouaches as well. Of course, I really was inspired by Da Vinci, and that's why we started out the books with Da Vinci, and I love the Renaissance period of time.
Again, that will be this afternoon at 3 o'clock on KGNU's Metro Show with your host, Miriam Schiff. Stay tuned. Coming up, we have a new commentary from Jim Hightower and an update from the BBC. Let's check in with the weather forecast for today. It is looking like we will have a high of about 41 degrees, a low tonight 22. Tomorrow, it's going to be about 36 degrees and 27 at night, but it's going to be a good chance of snow showers again tomorrow. They say 50% chance of snow showers tomorrow. Sunny on Wednesday with a high of 40. We have about 24 degrees outside our Boulder studios right now. Again, the storm is moving out. The sun is out. Roads are, however, in rough shape. There's a lot of snow piled in the middle of the streets here in Boulder. And there are still some power outages in parts of the Front Range and up on into Wyoming. Several roads still closed or hazardous in the mountains.